Today on Tristan Storytime, we take a look at what goes on in a typical classic French family turned American family in the three daughters of Monsieur DuPont. Then we take a gander at the lives of the straw, the coal, and a bean. Next, an old rat wises up to a cat's tricks in The Cat and the Old Rat, followed by a classic counting and singing game, This Old Man. And finally, in the poetry corner, we go back to 1775, where we witness the true story and the ride of Paul Revere. Those stories and more next. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Tristan Storytime. I'm your host, Tristan Gardner, and I'm certainly glad you could join me today. We've got some great stories picked out, and I want to extend an invitation to use your imaginations as I read them. So without any further ado, let's get the show on the road. In other words, on with the stories! Today's picture book story deals with the typical life of a typical family, but the mother becomes sick and is sent into the country to get well. This story is yet another great way to celebrate our third season. Here is the story of the three daughters of Monsieur DuPont. When Monsieur DuPont was a Frenchman, he had three daughters, and their names were Anne-Marie, Therese, and La Petite Georgette. But when he became an American for a change, he called himself Mr. DuPont, and his daughters were called Anne Mary, Terry, and George. Mrs. DuPont, who still called herself Madame DuPont when nobody was looking, had a linen cupboard of which she was very proud, and it was her one delight to keep it always full of the most beautiful linen. Linen fascinated her, just as kittens fascinate other people, and money fascinates my Uncle James. She was never tired of buying it, and running her fingers over it, and holding it against her cheek, and then tucking it lovingly away in her cupboard. And whenever she had a birthday, her three daughters would put all their savings together and buy her a tablecloth or a pair of dusters, so that Mrs. DuPont would say,
"My darlings, but how they are ravishing!"
They loved to hear her say this. One day, Mrs. DuPont was not feeling very well, and then there were many more days when she was not any better. And first a doctor came, and then a nurse came, and then she and the nurse went away into the country together to see if that would do her any good. And all the time, Mr. DuPont went about the house saying "t-t-t" to himself and looking very miserable. And Anne Mary wrote to her mother every day to say that they were all getting on all right and did want her back so badly. And Terry ended up her prayers every night with,
"And may she suddenly come back tomorrow morning about 7:30. So that I can wake up, and there she is."
And George kissed the door of her mother's empty bedroom every time she passed it, as a sort of friendly habit, and all the house called to her to come back to it. And at last there came a day when Mr. DuPont had a letter saying that Mrs. DuPont was very nearly well again, and would be home again on Saturday afternoon. This was on the Monday, so they had less than a week to wait, and they were all just as happy as they could be thinking of it.
"We must celebrate it," said Terry solemnly.
George didn't know what celebrate meant, so Anne Mary explained it to her until she did know, and then they all wondered how they should do it.
"I know,"
said Terry suddenly.
"Let's send all the linen to the wash, and then it will be lovely and clean and smelling lavendery when she comes back to it."
Anne Mary was not sure if this was a good thing to do. There was so much of it, and it would look so funny on the hill if they suddenly had 112 tablecloths and only one white shirt and...
Well, anyhow, George thinks it's a lovely idea,
said Terry carelessly.
And you know what fun it will be putting it all back again.
The thought of putting it all back again was too much for Aunt Mary.
Very well, darlings,
she said.
We'll do it. Come along.
So they counted it out. There were 112 tablecloths, 42 bath towels, 73 small towels, 26 pairs of sheets, 229 pillowcases, and more dusters than I can possibly put down here. And they all went to the laundry together. On the Saturday morning, they all came back, except one duster. And Aunt Mary, Terry, and George put them in the cupboard as neat as neat, George being particularly helpful, and then they waited for their mother. She came at last. Aunt Mary said that she was prettier than ever, and Mr. Dupont said she had never looked so well. And Terry and George thought that she was even nicer to kiss than she had ever been before. For some time, they all talked together about everything, and you could see that Mrs. Dupont couldn't help thinking of her linen cupboard now and then. But she didn't say anything, and Terry and George kept whispering to each other,
"Won't she be surprised when she sees?"
And sometimes, George said to Aunt Mary,
"How surprised do you think she'll be?"
At last, she got up, saying,
"Well, I think I'll just..."
And they knew where she was going, and they all went with her. She threw open the chest, and of course she knew at once what had happened. She just clasped her hands and cried,
"My darlings, but how they are ravishing!"
And then they all four hugged each other. Later on, when he saw the hill, Mr. Dupont clasped his hands and cried too. You know, it's always a good thing when people reunite as a family. And having Mrs. Dupont come home to reunite with such beautiful laundry and such a beautiful hug together, I'd say it was well worth the wait. That was such a beautiful ending, I almost feel like crying. Stick around, we'll be back in a moment. Normally, for humans like you and me, and your pets, it feels good to help someone. But if you're a pile of straw, a pile of coal, or even a simple bean, then this fairy tale isn't for you. Fortunately, I don't know of anybody who would be any of those things. So I guess it's safe to tell this story. And seeing how they're three different characters, this story's a great one to celebrate our third season with. And it's called The Straw, the Coal, and the Bean. A bean and a hot coal met each other on the high road, and as they were both rolling along in the same direction, they soon struck up a friendship. Presently, they were joined by a straw, and the three began talking together. They were all going out in the world to seek their fortunes.
"It's just a bit of luck that I can travel about in this way,"
said the bean.
"If I had not been a stout, active fellow, I would have been boiled into soup by now. The mistress was about to throw me into the pot with a lot of other beans, but I managed to slip through her fingers and rolled out through the doorway and down the steps without even noticing I was gone."
"That too was a clever trick,"
said the hot coal.
"I too am a lively chap. I and my brothers were set to heat a kettle, but I jumped out of the fire, and I was so hot the cook did not dare to touch me. She pushed me out of doors with her foot, and now I am free to go about the world as I choose and seek my fortune."
The straw sighed.
"I was never as active as that,"
she said.
"Always, wherever the wind blew me, I went. The farmer bird picked up a whole armful of straws to make a bed for the cow. But the wind caught me up and carried me off, and here I am.
While they were talking in this way, the comrades came to a brook, and this stopped their journey, for they did not know how to get across. The straw could easily have sailed over on the first puff of wind, but that way would not do for the other two.
"Listen,"
said the straw.
"I am long enough to reach from one side of the stream to the other. I will lay myself across it like a bridge, and then you can both walk on over me without getting wet."
To this plan, the other two were glad to agree, so the straw laid herself across the stream.
"You go first,"
said the bean, for he was a cautious fellow and wanted to see whether the bridge was safe before he tried it. The coal, however, was quick and fiery. He ran out on the straw, but halfway over, he grew dizzy and had to stop.
"Quick, quick,"
cried the straw.
"I am burning."
For the coal was still very hot.
"Wait,"
said the coal, balancing himself.
"Just a minute."
But the straw could not wait even for a minute. The coal had burned through it, and down they both went into the water, the coal hissing as it fell. That seemed so comical to the bean that it began to laugh. It laughed and laughed. It laughed so hard that at last it split its skin. And that would have been the end of it if a tailor had not chanced to come by just then.
"Help! Help!"
cried the bean. The tailor looked all about him, and then he saw the bean lying on the ground. He picked it up, and it did not take him long to see what was the matter with it. "This slit can easily be mended," he said, and he whipped out his needle and thread and sewed up the bean in a trice. Unluckily, he had only black thread, and the stitches made a line of black down the side of the bean. And ever since then, if you look, you will see that every bean of that kind has a black line down one side of it. I think it's safe to say there's a moral to this story that all three characters should have learned, especially the straw. You shouldn't leave the place in which you've been put, as you cannot escape your fate. I just love reading stories, don't you? You're listening to Tristan's Storytime. I bet you've been tricked at least once in your lifetime. Maybe it's your older brother or sister, or somebody else who isn't related to you playing a practical joke on you. Yes, almost everyone has been tricked by somebody at least once. But what I'm referring to is a different kind of trick a certain cat plays. For he always has a trick for tricking a few mice so he can have an easy meal. But unfortunately for him, an old rat has a knack for wising up to his tricks. And I'll explain why as I read The Cat and the Old Rat by Aesop. There was once a cat who was so watchful that a mouse hardly dared show the tip of his whiskers for fear of being eaten alive. That cat seemed to be everywhere at once with his claws all ready for a pounce. At last, the mice kept so closely to their dens that the cat saw he would have to use his wits well to catch one. So one day, he climbed up on a shelf and hung from it, head downward as if he were dead, holding himself up by clinging to some ropes with one paw. When the mice peeped out and saw him in that position, they thought he had been hung up there in punishment for some misdeed. Very timidly at first, they stuck out their heads and sniffed about carefully, but as nothing stirred, all trooped joyfully out to celebrate the death of the cat. Just then, the cat let go of his hold, and before the mice recovered from their surprise, he had made an end of three or four. Now the mice kept more strictly at home than ever. But the cat, who was still hungry for mice, knew more tricks than one. Rolling himself in flour until he was covered completely, he lay down in the flour bin with one eye open for the mice. Sure enough, the mice soon began to come out. To the cat, it was almost as if he already had a plump young mouse under his claws. When an old rat, who had had much experience with cats and traps, and had even lost a part of his tail to pay for it, sat up at a safe distance from the hole in the wall where he lived.
"Take care,"
he cried.
"That may be a heap of a meal, but it looks to me very much like the cat. Whatever it is wisest to keep at a safe distance."
Well, thanks to the old rat and his wise words, the mice now know the moral of this story, and the cat probably will too. The wise do not let themselves be tricked a second time. Here's a great counting song for us to sing along to. And, of course, you may recall singing this song in our very first season of Tristan Storytime. I don't remember how many verses this song has, so I decided to ask the Count to come over and give us his answer. So, Count, how many verses are in this song?
That's 10! 10 verses!
Yeah, that's right, 10. Well, you know the drill, folks. We're in for a fun time today, so it's time to sing along to This Old Man.
This old man, he played one. He played knick-knack on my thumb with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. This old man came rolling home. This old man, he played two. He played knick-knack on my shoe with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. This old man came rolling home. This old man, he played three. He played knick-knack on my knee with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. This old man came rolling home. This old man, he played four. He played knick-knack on my door with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. This old man came rolling home. Give a dog a bone, this old man came rolling home. This old man, he played six. He played knick-knack on my sticks with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone, this old man came rolling home. This old man, he played seven. He played knick-knack up in heaven with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone, this old man came rolling home. This old man, he played eight. He played knick-knack on my gate with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. This old man came rolling home. This old man, he played nine. He played knick-knack on my spine with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. This old man came rolling home. This old man, he played ten. He played knick-knack once again with a knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. This old man came rolling home.
Don't go away. Tristan Storytime will continue. Normally, I'd tell you a straightforward poem on Tristan Storytime, but today I'm going to change things up a bit and tell you a true story. Yes, you heard right, a true story. Well, it's mostly true, with plenty of inaccuracies. Because those of you who've taken history classes, or will sometime in the future, may recall that these historical events go back, way back before your time, to April 18, 1775, when Paul Revere warned Samuel Adams and John Hancock that British troops were coming to arrest them. I can just imagine all of you shouting out,
The British are coming! The British are coming! Okay, it's time to tell you all about The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Class is in session. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft on the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One if by land and two if by sea. And I on the opposite shore will be ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm for the country folk to be up and to arm." Then he said, "Good night," and with muffled oar silently rode to the Charlestown shore, just as the moon rose over the bay, where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset British man of war, a phantom ship with each mast and spar, across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend through alley and street wanders and watches with eager ears, till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore. Then he climbed the tower of the old North Church by the wooden stairs with stealthy tread to the belfry chamber overhead, and startled the pigeons from their perch on the somber rafters that round him made masses and moving shapes of shade, by the trembling ladder steep and tall to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath in the churchyard lay the dead, in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear, like a sentinel's tread, the watchful night wind as it went, creeping along from tent to tent, and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead, for suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away, where the river widens to meet the bay. A line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred with a heavy stride, on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now gazed at the landscape far and near, then impetuous stamped the earth, and turned and tightened his saddle girth. But mostly he watched with eager search the belfry tower of the old North Church as it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral and somber and still. And lo, as he looks on the belfry's height, a glimmer and then a gleam of light. He springs to the saddle, the bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes till full on his sight a second lamp in the belfry burns. A hurry of hoofs in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath from the pebbles in passing a spark, struck out by a steed flying fearless and fleet. That was all, and yet, through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night, and the spark struck out by that steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He has left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him tranquil and broad and deep is the mystic meeting the ocean tides, and under the alders that skirt its edge, now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog, and felt the damp of the river fog that rises after the sun goes down. It was won by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed, and the meeting house windows, blank and bare, gaze at him with a spectral glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord Town. He heard the bleating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadows brown, and one was safe and asleep in his bed. Who at the bridge would be first to fall? Who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball? You know the rest in the books you have read, how the British regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave them ball for ball from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the fields to emerge again, under the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. So through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm. A cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For born on the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed, and the midnight message of Paul Revere. I also want to give a shout out to my high school history teacher, Mr. Van Stream, and history teachers all over the country for teaching us all about this historical event. Next time on Tristan Storytime, we'll dig deeper into the nursery rhyme and the story of Little Bo Peep, who lost her sheep. Then we tell an odd, entertaining, and mildly terrifying story of the spider and the flea. Next, we read an Aesop fable dealing with deceit, again, the wolf in sheep's clothing, followed by the very famous song and question, Do You Know the Muffin Man? And finally, we read the second of Edgar Allan Poe's most famous poems, Annabel Lee. That's next time on Tristan Storytime. Well, that just about wraps things up for today, but before we go, I want to remind you of a few last-minute pieces of information that I think you should know. First of all, if you enjoyed listening to this episode, there are plenty more exciting episodes on any of the podcast platforms you chose today. Also, you can follow Tristan Storytime on any of the social media platforms where you'll find video clips of stories I read on past shows every Thursday at 4 p.m. And you can find it all on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. In addition, you can find Tristan Storytime on Discord. And as you've noticed, music and sound effects will be included with every story I read. Every day, we're always finding new ways for all of us to grow together. Oh, and one last thing. If you have a classic family-friendly story idea that you'd like me to read on a future show, such as a picture book story, fairy tale, a fable from Aesop, or a poem, just send an email to TristanStorytime@gmail.com. That's TristanStorytime, all lowercase, @gmail.com. And that's without the apostrophe. Well, it's time for me to go, but I'll be back again soon. So until next time, I'm Tristan Gardner. Thank you for listening, and God bless, my friends. And remember to keep using your imaginations, because I use mine to help you use yours. Today's stories and nursery rhymes are The Three Daughters of Monsieur Dupont, taken from the book A Gallery of Children by A.A. Milne. Illustrations by Henriette Wildebeek Lemire, published in 1925 by the Stanley and Paul Company in London, England, and the David McKay Company in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Straw, the Coal, and the Bean, taken from the book Mother's Nursery Tales, told and illustrated by Catherine Pyle. published in 1918 by E.P. Dutton and Company. The Cat and the Old Rat, taken from the book The Aesop for Children by Aesop. Pictures by Milo Winter, published in 1919 by Rand McNally and Company. This Old Man, originally published in 1906. Music arrangement by The Green Orbs. Paul Revere's Ride, taken from the book The Children's Own Longfellow by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, published in 1908 by Houghton Mifflin Company.